Welcome back. We're in conversation with Dr. Reinhold Wieth, Director of the Bone and Mineral Laboratory at Mount Sinai Hospital and Professor at the University of Toronto Department of Nutritional Sciences. And Dr. Wieth, I wanted to continue on and ask about the basic science, because there are news reports all the time, right? It's literally now every 2 or 3 weeks, there'll be a study about a vitamin. It could be vitamin D, could be vitamin B. But it seems, though, that there is more attention and more serious science being done to look at the claims and to look at the effect of this particular vitamin. And I wanted to ask you what some of the areas of basic science that you found very interesting that has led to the progression in our understanding of the biochemistry of this particular compound.
Well, the basic science has been there for many years. One of the problems often is there's a lot of research gets done and it sort of lingers onward in university libraries. Nobody ever reads it. Like I was saying before, many cells throughout people's bodies use the 25-hydroxy D to change it to something called 1,25-dihydroxy D. And what that does in different cells depends on the cell. Mm-hmm. For example, cancer cells or stem cells developing within the breast or in the prostate, when you have higher levels of 25-hydroxy D, it automatically gets converted by those cells to 1,25-D. And what that then does, it helps cells to differentiate, as cells are growing in a petri dish, is telling a cell to know what it's supposed to be. Remember, we all have the same DNA, and all of our cells do. But some cells are smart enough to know that they're supposed to be a prostate cell, and others are supposed to be a muscle cell, etc. And that process is called differentiation. In order for that to happen properly, the 1,25-D helps with those messages. The cells kind of perhaps talk mm-hmm. with each other and, smarten each other up. Furthermore, higher levels of vitamin D, or 1,25-dihydroxy D in that final form, tend to make cells proliferate less. So what's the problem with cancer? Well, the cells are not fully differentiated. They're not smart enough to know what they're supposed to be.
Right.
And furthermore, they keep replicating. So you have an uncontrolled growth. So that one thing that one knows with certain cells is that providing them with more vitamin D helps those cells to just plain get normal. And when you think about it through human evolution, we are the naked ape that lived in the tropics.
Right.
We are supposed to be nudists, getting full skin exposure to sunshine. In our natural environment, we have lots of vitamin D present. But our modern society has taken this raw material away, this messenger material, 25-hydroxy D. We've deprived ourselves, and then the cells don't have enough of this stuff to be smart enough to know how to behave. That's at least from the cancer point of it, but from this point of view, your immune system, the same kind of phenomenon happens. There was a very recent, about a year ago, there was a paper published in one of the major science journals that basically was looking at white blood cells, the cells that attack foreign things, and how those cells respond to tuberculosis bacteria. So you're thinking tuberculosis, mm-hmm. you've got them in cells in a petri dish, and what the white blood cells need is serum. They need certain components from the blood so that they can start attacking the bacteria. Now, when the scientists took the blood of white people, they found that those white blood cells could attack the tuberculosis by mycobacterium. But when they used the blood of black Americans, it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Something was missing from the blood of the black Americans. And finally, they discovered when you add 25-hydroxy vitamin D to the black people's serum to bring it up to the same level as it was in white people, then the white blood cells could attack the tuberculosis mycobacterium, sorry about the terminology. Mm-hmm. But what we know from the petri dish is that simply adding vitamin D to vitamin D-deprived serum helps the white blood cells attack foreign bacteria better, and it seems to protect against tuberculosis in the test tube. That same phenomenon, higher vitamin D protects against tuberculosis, has also been shown in patients. It hasn't completely completed clinical trials yet, but even before clinical trials, you do surveys of people and ask, oh, people with tuberculosis, what are their blood vitamin D levels like? And very commonly, those who have tuberculosis have remarkably low blood vitamin D levels. And what's going on right now are clinical trials where patients with tuberculosis are being randomized in a placebo-controlled format to see whether you can clear up the TB bacteria that you can pick up from sputum. So those, you know, we'll find out more about that later, but in terms of, you know, where the knowledge goes, it goes in various layers from laboratory experiments to society surveys, and then society surveys, you have to go, well, do a placebo-controlled trial, right. And that's the process that's going on. Some of that is in parallel with what used to go on with bone disease, you know, like in the osteoporosis field, we've completed the clinical trials, the placebo-controlled clinical trials, and we know that it truly does work there. But there's always an evolving story. You know, what's the next condition? One of them is tuberculosis. Other ones are cancer. And those are things where you still don't have all of the answers.
Yeah, and there seems to be also other studies that using a similar methodology of looking, for example, at Parkinson's patients or people with inflammatory bowel disease or prostate cancer or falls in the elderly. It was a Dr. Michael Hollick from Boston University
He quoted others. There was a lady named Hickey Bishop Ferrari who's done those clinical trials. Hollick was quoting other people's work where, again, placebo control, you give some 800 units of vitamin D.
Yes, exactly.
Others not.
Yeah.
And number of falls. Like, for example, if you've got bad bones, you know, thin bones on a bone density, you know, factually, it really doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't break a bone, why do you break a bone? You fall down.
Exactly.
If you don't fall down, it doesn't matter whether your bone density is high or low. Vitamin D helps your muscles. Like, for example, a child with rickets or a person with low blood vitamin D levels, it's not just the bone thing. They have what's called proximal muscle weakness. They have weak muscles, and there's a classic what's called a waddling gait of osteomalacia. They have a muscle disease. In addition to that, neurologically, the nerves function better so that people can balance better. If you do a balancing test, it's called a, you know, there's something called a Lord sway meter, and again, the people from Switzerland, Hickey Bishop Ferrari, did a balance test on basically a placebo-controlled trial, and those who got higher vitamin Ds did better. I have to, you know, also mention, these were people who, before they started, were very low in vitamin D.
Right.
But then when they were given it, they did better. The last thing, when you know, you might ask, well, where do you want to be on your vitamin D blood test?
Yes.
And I'm sure that every physician in Canada now, when they get their vitamin D result back, it says the desirable range starts at a level of 75 nanomoles per liter. You want to be there. If you've got a level that's, let's say, 130, you go, wonderful, I'm above 75.
Mm-hmm.
And so where did that number of 75 come from? It comes from every bit of cross-sectional research, or most of them. You look across, you know, for example, a society survey, and you go, well, where would I like to be? What looks like the healthiest thing, you know, for osteoporosis fractures? What looks like the healthiest thing to prevent breast cancer or prostate cancer or bowel disease, which actually has the strongest evidence, and you go, I'd like to be higher than 75 when I look at the data.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for Americans, they use a different unit. They use nanograms per milliliter. So for Americans, they want to be higher than 30 nanograms per milliliter, which is the same as the Canadian 75 nanomoles per liter.
Right. But now, optimally, though, it would be preferable, instead of just being at the low normal point, to be in the hundreds or 125 range as a means of just having some reserve, given how vitamin D levels can vary. Also, again, as Canadians, and I'm not surprised anymore when I show my medical students and say, watch what happens when we do this month and we're going to take vitamin D levels on patients. It's all going to come back. You're going to see levels in the 30s, the 40s, the 50s.
Yes.
You know, below, and invariably, that's exactly what happens. Almost everybody, despite them saying, I've been out in the sun, I've been busy, you know, I've exposed myself to some sun during the summertime, it still is not enough, or it seems that it's not enough to give them at least a level that is consistently above normal.
Well, again, I think you have to think about it a little bit, what we used to call normal was what another word for it is endemic. In other words, what everybody has. You do
right.
a survey of 100 people and, quote, normal for 100 people is somewhere between 20 and 80 nanomoles per liter.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at a survey of people, it's those highest few numbers, above 75, that's the healthiest group. That 20 to 80 I was mentioning was a wintertime, quote, normal for Canada. In the summer, we do go higher than that. But we have to be very careful. That number 75, think of it as optimal or a decision level, not inherently what's normal, because normal happens to be in Canada too low for optimal anyway.
Exactly right.
It's, you know, I'm sorry to make it sound complicated, but what we used to think of as normal is not necessarily the best. What we used to think of as normal in Canada is probably not normal for human beings.
Mm-hmm.
Because what is a normal human being? The naked ape who lived in the tropics. You know, for example, we are primates. You know, apes and monkeys are our nearest relatives. I use in my talks a slide that shows the natural environment for all other primate species. And the farthest north they go is south of Florida. If you were living in your species' natural environment, you'd be, you know, living, you know, more in the middle of Africa.
Right.
Barbados would be a nice place, not Canada. And then you have
right.
to ask yourself, well, gee, if we take people out of their natural environment and plunk them in Ottawa and tell them to close down 95% of that factory, the skin that makes vitamin D, you have to ask yourself, mightn't there be some problems with this?
Right.
And we're starting to realize it. So, you know, just because we're looking at, you know, closed northern people, normal for them isn't best for a human being.
So do you think that the recommendations of Canadian Cancer Society to take 1,000 units of vitamin D3 a day is a reasonable suggestion?
It's the logical thing for them to do, yeah. You're going to find that over the next 2 or 3 years, there will be new reviews of the Food and Nutrition Board, but I can give you a prediction.
Sure.
The amount that they put in multivitamins or a quart of milk in about 3 or 4 years after the new recommendation is going to be still sticking around 800 units a day. And the reason is guidelines are based upon placebo-controlled clinical trial evidence. They are not based on surveys. So there's different qualities of evidence that perhaps you know, would be kind of fun for you to cover if ever you wanted to. But there's a very big debate in what we think of as evidence-based medicine. And placebo-controlled trials, if they have not been done at a given dose of vitamin D, will never, ever make it into any kind of official guideline. The kind of official guidelines follow, you know, by several years where the real science evidence is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I was saying, you know, we've got placebo control evidence that, you know, 800 units of vitamin D helps to prevent osteoporosis fractures. And I highly, highly doubt that any government agency would recommend